The entire episode is great. The last scene, Oscars for me.
For me, for
For
us.
us.
Hi, Dawson, look, there's your mom.
Back to you, Bob. Accept your perfect life, Dawson. It's reality.
Cleanup continues to
982. Back to you, Bob.
Hello and welcome to Back to You, Bob, a Dawson's Creek podcast. We are your hosts, Christina and Micah, and this is episode 222, Parental Discretion Advised, which originally aired on May 26th, 1999.
May 26th.
Summer's around the corner.
I miss those days.
I know.
The finales, late May, Memorial Day.
School's coming to a close. Shows are coming to a close. The energy of summer is just shining down upon you. You can feel it. It's coming.
Shining down. It's the first summer we all had licenses, driver's licenses.
Not me.
Ew, why? Oh, because you're so young.
Yeah. I was 14.
We had our licenses. We were driving. We were living.
I mean, what is better than the first summer with a driver's license? You can go anywhere you want.
Honestly, nothing. We peaked early. It was all downhill from there.
Also of note, this is the finale. This is it. Season two is coming to a close.
I truly cannot believe it.
It went fast.
Yeah. It's a great season.
It is a great season, but I have to say, I am so excited to get into season three. I know season two was your rewatch season or a big one of your rewatch seasons, but season three is like my big rewatch season.
I think season two is my overall favorite, as I've said. Season one and two are the ones I've rewatched the most. I do love season three, though. I especially love the beginning of season three. It has that everyone's back. Everyone looks fresh. You know, as we'll talk about, it's a huge cliffhanger. The anticipation of the season three premiere. Anyway, what are we drinking?
We are drinking a Backdraft, which is a shot of Fireball with a Guinness Chaser. Fireball, I could take it or leave it. It's very easy to drink. It's just immediate hangover to me. But I love a Guinness, and St. Patrick's Day is right around the corner.
Wow, it is. You just kind of blew my mind. It's March.
It's March. February came and went. I never knew what day it was in February.
I think mentally, I'm in 2023 still.
Sure.
But anyway, I'm going to dive in to the recap.
Please do.
This episode opens on Dawson and Joey in his bedroom where they're debating love. They're watching The Age of Innocence with Michelle Pfeiffer and Daniel Day-Lewis. Joey says that loving someone when the love has no chance of thriving, now that's romance. Dawson disagrees and says it's tragic. Joey prefers sad love stories. They're more powerful. When love transcends bad circumstances, there's nothing better. He asks Joey if she'll always love him. And their love will transcend bad circumstances. She says they don't have to worry about that. The next day, Dawson turns to his mom for advice. Without going into details, he asks her what to do about Joey and her dad, whom he saw with drugs last episode. Gail says that he could tell the person he cares about the truth, or he can go to the person who the person he cares about and tell that person to fix it. So that's what Dawson does. He gives Mr. Potter a warning to clean up his act. Mr. Potter tells Dawson that he got into a situation that he can't get out of. Dawson tells him that he better fix it and get out of it. Mr. Potter invites Joey, Dawson, and all of their friends to study at the Ice House since it's closed for renovations, and they could use that as a headquarters to prepare for their finals. Meanwhile, Pacey and his dad are butting heads as always, and it seems worse than ever. Pacey overhears that his dad, the town sheriff, is watching Joey's dad very closely, and he asks him not to harass Mr. Potter. Mr. Witter tells Pacey that his attitude has been awful since Andy left and talks about her in a disparaging manner. No girl is worth ruining your life over. Pacey exits the car very angrily and vents to Dawson and lets him know that he has not heard from Andy yet. We later see during his final that Pacey puts his head down and doesn't even try to take the exam. Jen and Jack, meanwhile, are walking on the quad before class and they discuss how Jen was up all night working on a paper. She reveals that her paper is about teen suicide. She confesses that she's thought about it many times, and this shocks Jack. He's very concerned. Jen says it's common. Most teens have thought about it. They run into Graham's before school, and she asks Jen to move home. Calmer heads have prevailed, but Jen declines. During the study session at the Ice House, Pacey's dad arrives to talk to Joey's dad to question him about Pete, the man who helped him with the renovations to the Ice House in the previous episode. Mr. Potter tells Mr. Witter that he doesn't know anything about Pete having a criminal history. Joey's very upset that Mr. Witter is harassing her dad like this. Meanwhile, during the study session, Jack and Jen argue. He says it's in Jen's best interest to take Gramps up on her offer to move back in. Jen feels like Jack doesn't want her staying with him, but he says it's not about that. He's just looking out for her. Mr. Witter takes Pacey outside the study session and tells him that the school called and he knows that Pacey's blowing his finals. He doesn't want Pacey hanging out at the ice house, the place of a known felon. It looks terrible for Pacey's dad. Pacey's dad grabs him to leave and the two scuffle and Mr. Witter ends up slapping Pacey. Just then, someone throws a fiery brick through the ice house window, setting the ice house on fire with everyone inside. Dawson manages to save Mr. Potter and get everyone to safety. Mr. Witter and Pacey get into it again outside, and Mr. Witter takes a crack at Andy and how she's crazy. Pacey punches his dad in the face and says that Mr. Witter can attack him all he wants, but he can never say anything about Andy, ever. She's done more to his life in 6 months than his dad has done in 16 years. If he does it again, he'll be policing this town from a hospital bed. And even if Mr. Potter is a criminal, he's still a better dad to Joey than he has been to Pacey. The next day, at the behest of his parents, Dawson tells Joey the truth about her dad. She's devastated and she asks him to drop it. Dawson says that she might be able to work out a deal for her dad if she turns him in. Joey thinks that Dawson is crazy and says she could never do that. She asks him to please stop. They will never survive this, ever. Dawson says he's willing to take the chance. He cares about Joey too much. He gives her an ultimatum. Either she turns her dad in or he does. Joey and the Learys go to the police station, and Mr. Witter clues Joey in on the investigation. They don't have anything on her dad yet, but if they wait until they do, he's going to go away for life. The people that Mr. Potter are in business with are dangerous. His competitors are the ones that tipped off the police, and they're the ones that started the fire last night. The police are going to need Joey's dad's help to bring down these people. Jack confronts Jen. He saw the way she looked at that fire. She didn't run. Jen breaks down and says she doesn't want to kill herself. She doesn't want to die. She just didn't care enough about her life to run away. So Jen returns to Graham's house. She tells Graham that she doesn't need to live here. She wants to. She wants a family. She's ready to move back in under three conditions. One, they get to the root of why it didn't work out in the first place. Two, she says she's been through a lot and she needs Graham's support, not her judgment. And the third condition is that Jack moves in too. Graham agrees and embraces Jen. Gail announces to Mitch and Dawson that she's leaving Capeside for Philadelphia. But when everything happens with the fire, Mitch realizes that he can't lose Gail or his family. He finally asks Gail to stay and choose him over Philly. He wants her back. Gail says that Mitch wants what they had, but that's gone forever. She's choosing Philly in the hopes that someday they could find their way back to each other when they realize they'll never be what they once were. Mr. Witter approaches Pacey and tells him that Andy called for him. They had a great talk. He realizes that Andy is a great girl. He's sorry. Pacey accepts his apology. Mr. Witter realizes he doesn't know Pacey at all. Andy told him that Pacey is her hero. Mr. Witter says he knows he hasn't been a good father, and Andy wanted him to give Pacey something. He hugs Pacey. In a very emotional scene, Joey confronts her dad and asks him if he's dealing drugs. He breaks down and confesses, and she sobs. He says he just wanted to provide for them. He wanted them to thrive, not just survive. He wanted to get ahead a little bit, and then he was going to stop. She's devastated. She trusted him. She let him back in. He did his time. It was over. And he invited it all back in. Joey can't believe his actions could have gotten her killed. He says he wishes he would have died in the fire and he's sorry. She says she's sorry too. And she lifts up her shirt, revealing a wire. They walk outside to meet Pacey's dad. And Bessie can't even look at Mr. Potter, who's taken away to prison again. Dawson is there too. And he tells Joey she did the right thing. She fires back that he did the right thing. What she did was awful. She hopes that she can forgive her father someday. She doesn't know if she'll ever be able to forgive herself. But the one thing she does know is that she will never forgive Dawson. She doesn't want to know him, and there are some things that love can't overcome. She's done with him for good, and she leaves him in her front yard alone. And that is the season 2 finale. Parental discretion advised.
So many feelings. I rolled my eyes multiple times while you were doing that recap.
So many feelings. So much drama.
So much drama. So much crying.
So much crying.
So many parents. So much to talk about.
So many parents. So much to talk about.
Well, this episode was written by Greg Berlanti. As a reminder, this season, he was with us for 207 The All-Nighter, 214 To Be or Not to Be, 215 That Is the Question, and 220 Reunited. Those episodes are top tier.
Damn, he's good.
He will be with us as a writer through season four and as a producer through season five. So we have more Greg Berlanti coming down the pipe.
Yeah, he's basically the showrunner. We'll get into it. So who directed Parental Discretion Advised? Who gave us that backdraft fire scene?
Oh my gosh, Molotov Cocktail. It was directed by Gregory Prang. As a reminder, he was with us for 215, That Is the Question, and 218, A Perfect Wedding. Also amazing episodes. Obviously, one of them was also written by Greg Berlanti. And he is going to remain with us as a producer and a director through the end of the series. So Gregory Prang is here to stay.
I know the name. I know him well.
Saw it every week.
They're just a great team. It was such a good writer-director duo.
Such a good emotional episode. There were some really interesting shot choices, which we can talk about. That was great.
Yeah, that action scene. I mean, we'll get into it. But for Dawson's, I don't think we've seen anything like it.
No, not yet.
So what about the guest cast shout out?
I'm going to give the guest cast shout out this week to Mr. Milo. Richard K. Olson, Mr. Milo, the guidance counselor.
He's back.
We've talked about him a bunch. He was in 4 episodes of this season. So it's time for us to talk about him, even though we've talked about him time and time again. His inception was the crankiest man you've ever met, telling Pacey that he'll never amount to anything. And then the last time we saw him, he was giving Pacey a hug and he's never been happier. We just love him.
It made me happy to see him.
Yeah. He's very much so tied to Pacey's story and Pacey's success and his arc with Andy improving as a student. And same thing here. Pacey has a tough time with his finals because Andy left, and Mr. Milo is the first one to say that he's concerned. He's got his eyes on Pacey, and we love that.
We love that.
But yeah, he's got a nice little career. He has 52 acting credits. He's with us for 5 episodes total. He'll be with us 1 more episode next season, and then that's the end of Mr. Milo.
Is he alive?
He is not alive. He passed in 2007.
Poor guy.
One thing I wanted to talk about from his credits, he was on 5 different episodes of Matlock, and he played 4 different characters. And you know that I love that.
You love that.
I had to bring it up.
Back in the day when no one would have noticed.
Exactly.
Well, what are the music moments of this week?
For me, it's Alanis.
For sure.
So good. It's when Grams and Jen are having their little chat at the end. It's so good. And actually, the song is on the streaming version. So that was a nice surprise.
It's, That I Would Be Good by Alanis. It's so emotional. It's so good. Plays during that scene, as you said, when Jen goes to Grams and takes her up on her offer to move back home. And I also know the song that was playing when Gail was telling Mitch she's going to Philadelphia.
Letting Go by Sozzy.
Those would be my 2 music moments.
I also knew the Oleander song when Pacey's taking his final. It's that Mr. Milo scene, and then it goes into Mike and Dawson. It didn't spring to me as a music moment, but I used to love Oleander.
I knew that song as well. Yeah, I didn't remember the moment. Obviously, it's really just Pacey in class, right? He puts his head down.
Mm-hmm.
But I did remember the song too. I don't know if I remember from the show, like you said, but.
Exactly. Yeah.
The music was solid this episode.
It was good. And Alanis just brought it home.
As she always does, as she always will. I just saw her at the Hollywood Bowl 2 years ago.
Jealous.
Love.
Do you have any past versus presents?
My past versus present. I knew that when Mike gets busted, he was very remorseful and regretful when Joey reveals her wire and when she asks him at the end. But I never really clocked before the fire starts, he's trying to get rid of the drugs, or he grabs the drugs. Whatever Dawson has said to him really hit home with him. And I never clocked that before. I never noticed that Mike was trying to free the ice house of the drugs before the fire. So that would be my past versus present.
In this episode, rewatching this episode, I was usually like, well, Dawson's just trying to do what's best for Joey. And now I'm like, he was just so annoying to me. And the stakes, I understand the stakes of Mike going back to jail and Joey's whole life blowing up and like whatever, but the immediate stakes felt very small to me. Like Dawson was making it seem like somebody, like Joey was going to be dead, and maybe she was because someone tried to burn her restaurant down with her inside of it. But I don't know. The stakes for me this time around were way less than I think that they have been in previous rewatches.
Right. When you're younger and you're watching this, it's so, oh my God, there's a fire and drugs. And then
drugs. He's dealing drugs. Something terrible is going to. It's like, no. I mean, he's going to go to jail, maybe, but.
Well, it is coke.
Oh, it is coke.
It's not pot.
I don't know.
I have to agree with you. I always thought Dawson was just kind of doing the right thing, stuck between rock and hard place. But it was his delivery, his threatening Mr. Potter, his giving Joey an ultimatum. It was so self-righteous. The way he was talking to... Now, yes, Joey's dad is a criminal. But I don't know if I would go up to him and say, fix it or else, or the comments Dawson was making.
It was unreal. I think it may have held more water if he went up to him and just kind of implied that he knew and was like, something's got to change. It was wild. It was wild.
But I will say, we say it every week. I mean, the character is consistent. He's judgmental. Yep. He's selfish. Everything's black and white.
Yeah.
In your black and white world, this is an easy decision, but this is my dad. Things aren't black and white.
It's why I fell in love with you and why I can't stand you, basically.
Those are good past versus presents. This was one where you definitely watch differently older than we did in 1999.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's open it up.
Let's open it up.
The episode opens with Dawson and Joey. They're watching this movie. They're discussing, can love transcend sad circumstances? Even if two people love each other, is unrequited love sad or is it romantic? Basically, is what they're saying. When the love can't survive, and it bookended when it's meant to reflect at the end, when Joey breaks up with Dawson forever, Dawson has that unrequited love. He loves Joey. It's never going to survive. It's never going to thrive. She's never going to love him back after this. He did the unthinkable. There's no moving past it. It was a nice little bookend. And it was also, I thought, a nice little throwback to season one, just seeing those two debating a movie. They had their season one energy.
Yeah.
They were just debating how the movie applied to life. And it was nice to see their little, it was like vintage Dawson's.
It was a really nice bookend. And I feel like they laid it out. This is like one of those masterful things where they laid it out so perfectly. You don't know where the episode is going, but it's like, well, what do you like about that? And it's like, well, one person will continue to love the other person forever, even though there may or may not be a chance of them ever getting back together. And that really speaks to the series, I think. And then the fact that Dawson says, will you love me forever? And Joey doesn't give him an answer. She just says, it doesn't matter. I thought that was so brilliantly done because it's not like she said yes and then she goes back on her word. It was great.
Great.
Switching gears, we cut to the high school. Jack and Jen are walking in the morning and they're each drinking a coffee. Did you drink coffee in high school?
I sure didn't.
Sure didn't. There were a couple of kids who drank coffee in high school, but I felt like they were like very clearly trying to be like alt or like hard or like, which I think is kind of the vibe that Jen is trying to give off. Like she's a big city girl, so she drinks coffee, but it just struck me that they were drinking their little to-go coffees on the quad.
I think we had the occasional coffee when we made Dunkin' Donuts, like our little hangout, occasionally I would have coffee, certainly not every morning walking into school. Like,
Right. It wasn't like I need my coffee or I won't be able to function. It was more like, oh, let's go to Dunkin' after school and get a like sugary drink or something like that.
A colada.
Oh my God. Yeah. Avi.
Okay. So I have to comment. I gave Dawson, James Vanderbeek Dawson, whatever flack about his black pearl necklace. So we heard from a listener, Stevie, that she believes that the necklace was made by his real life mom. Aww. And now I feel terrible because I was making fun of it. And, I wear a necklace of my mom's. So I basically, another reason I'm just like Dawson, basically.
You're just fulfilling your destiny.
I feel bad. So I take it back. I love the necklace. Grams wants Jen to move back in. And Jen says, no, ma'am.
Yeah, they're really, they're going through it. Grams and Jen. And this is the first time I feel like we're seeing Grams comes to Jen and like, begs her to do certain things, but you could tell she's really distraught in this scene. She really wants her back.
What did you think about Graham's 180 about now begging Jen to move back in?
We have not seen Graham's since she kicked Jen out, correct?
Correct.
I wish they planted either a phone call or a Graham scene somewhere in the last episode or so just to move the needle a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. It was a little, I could buy it, sure, but I want to know
what the change of heart,
what the change of heart was. But I guess you could buy that Grams is such a nice, devout, godly woman that she realized the error of her ways and what she did was very harsh and calmer heads have prevailed.
And also, there was a change in Jen's living situation. She moved from the Learys in with Jack. So, like, maybe that was Grams being like, oh, no, this has gone off the rails. Like,
yes,
two teenagers living alone. So I could see that. I could buy that for sure.
Yeah. Pacey's dad is awful, and he's dropping Pacey off at school. And Pacey overhears that his dad is surveilling Joey's dad.
Yeah, I loved that little detail.
Oh, I just love the dads going after each other, and Joey and Pacey, Joey asking Pacey, like, why is your dad after my dad? Oh, I just love that little history, that little.
And just like a good little way for us to get that bit of information without it being beat over our head. The fact that Pacey's like, wait, that's the ice house. What's going on? Like the police radio of it all. It was just great. I love that little device.
Yeah. And I love that this show was a teen show, but like a whole finale centered on the parents.
Love it. And I want to talk about that. We've got Gail, we've got Mitch, we've got Mike Potter, we've got Bessie, who is kind of a parent in a weird way to Joey. We've got John Witter, we've got Grams, we've got Mr. Milo, who isn't a parent, but is an adult figure in the series. Like, there are a lot of them are here. I love that.
I just love how the parents were all woven in, because I hate how a lot of teen shows at that time, and now they act like the adults don't have an effect on the world and that all adults don't exist in the world. Our lives revolved around our parents as teenagers.
Yeah.
I relied on them for rides. I relied on them for money. Your life revolves around your parents when you're 15, 16.
Yeah, you've said that before, how people now are like, kids don't care about the parents. Like, don't put the parents in the show.
Yeah.
I was so invested in Mitch and Gail. What's going to happen? Is Mike Potter going back to jail? It's so crazy.
We've talked about it. I was always more invested in adults and adult shows as a kid. I always watched Up. This was like the first show where I was really watching like laterally my age group.
It's just great.
It's just great. We love adults.
We love adults.
Mr. Witter basically hates Andy. Never met her.
Mr. Witter is an asshole. There's no two ways around it. He's an asshole. He's kind of that toxic masculinity, alpha male. He gets excited when Pacey yells at him and he's like, oh, my son finally grew a pair. Like, it's that kind of tough love, trying to toughen Pacey up. It's crazy. He's not a nice guy.
He's also kind of a drunk, which we learned in the fishing episode. So he takes a crack at Andy when he tells Pacey, don't let a woman ruin your life. Don't throw your life away for a woman. Then he tells Pacey he doesn't want him hanging out at the ice house, and he grabs Pacey to leave and to scuffle, and he slaps him in the face.
Backhands him.
And the next scene, it's after the fire. Mr. Witter is with his fire department, police investigation co-workers. It's a small town, so you could buy that all the emergency service people know each other, fire, police, you know. And he doesn't want Pacey hanging out at the ice house. Pacey says, you know, is that what this is about? You're afraid you're going to look bad? And then he says what you said, which is like, oh, my son's growing a pair. Mr. Witter's showing off in front of his friends.
First he says, oh, you'll have to forgive my son. His girlfriend left and now it's his time of the month.
Yeah, that was nuts. And then he says something about Andy having her screws loose. And then Pacey clocks him in the face in front of his colleagues and says, don't you ever talk about Andy again. She's done more for my life in 6 months than you did in 16 years. If you say anything bad about her again, you'll be policing this town from a hospital bed. Which is crazy.
It is crazy. He full clocked him. Also, Pacey's a lefty, which I don't know if I've ever noticed before, but he decks him in the face. Mr. Witter falls back. It was quite the punch. And then Pacey calls him a rotten son of a bitch, which really made me laugh. Listen here, you rotten son of a bitch. Just funny to have that on the tip of your tongue. Like, that's the insult that comes out of your mouth.
He calls him a bastard when he gets out of the car too, to Dawson. And I was like, oh, no one ever calls him a bastard anymore. We should bring that back. Bastard. So we should look when Pacey clocks Thor in season one to protect Joey at the party.
Oh.
If it's a left or a right.
I would put money on the fact that I probably said in that episode, Pacey's a lefty. We didn't know that. I feel like I just keep noticing the same things over and over again.
No, you have a good memory because you listen to the episodes over and over and over when you're editing.
True.
But then at the end, Mr. Witter comes to apologize to Pacey and he says, you had another phone call, referring to the fact that he says, we got a call from the school. I know you haven't been taking your finals. But he says, this time you got a phone call and it's from Andy. She was chatty. She says that you're her hero. The way she talked about him to his dad changed the way that Pacey's dad sees him. Then he says, I'm so sorry. I know I haven't been the type of father you want. And he wants me to give you something. And he gives him a hug.
He gives him a very short little pat hug.
Yes. And Joshua Jackson did that thing that he did last week when he said goodbye to Andy. He does that like body acting, which is so real. Like when his dad approaches him, he doesn't know like what's happening. He's like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And the way he hesitates, you can just feel that they've like never hugged before, mm-hmm. or at least not in like 10 plus years. And it's very emotional.
It's so good. And so John Witter hugs him. And like you're saying, Pacey has that like stiff body and like confused face. And then John Witter pulls away and Pacey kind of like melts and pulls him back in. And they both have this emotional release that is so good. This hug is one of those moments that's burned into my brain.
So good. And he's arranged for Pacey to retake his finals,
mm-hmm.
which is a cute little, you know, Mr. Witter is connected. He's the town sheriff. Pacey's had a nice little arc this season. He said when people forgot his birthday that he was done being the sidekick and he was going to get his own storyline. He's got his own storyline. It was a great season arc for him. He went from being, you know, a failure at school to thriving. He got his own girlfriend. He's made some inroads with his dad. It was a nice little arc for him. And I love when shows do that.
Yeah. I understand why this is one of your favorite seasons, because everyone has a gigantic arc. If you look at where everyone started the season to where we are now, things have shifted so much, which I think is really true to life. Like high school, generally speaking, 1 year of high school, like you change so much. It's great.
I really miss when shows had that foresight to give us a nice, well-constructed season. And you might not know every episode at the beginning of the season, of course, but you know, you sit down at the beginning of the season and you say, you know, Pacey is going to meet someone this year that changes his life. He's going to do better in school. It's unrealistic to think that every problem in his life is going to get solved. It was just a very realistic, well done arc. And I enjoyed it.
Agreed.
I just love that Andy's like saving the day and helping Pacey's life from like not even in the same town.
I know. I wrote that down too, of like, you know that a show has done a good job with the character when I can picture exactly how that phone call went, of like chatty Andy running her little, like just like nervously telling him everything and like happily bragging about Pacey. And I 100% can picture how that went.
I can picture it too. That's such a good observation. That's because Andy's not in this episode. Meredith Monroe is not in this episode, but he says Andy called the house. She's chatty. And you could really just visualize it all. You mm-hmm. absolutely can. You're so right. And the anguish that Pacey's going through this episode, not hearing from her.
Yeah.
Waiting for a call. Again, pre-cell phone, you had to be at the house to get the call. She could have been calling this whole time and he could have been missing it. You know, there's just something about that time period. We're never going to get it. We're never going to get this type of...
We're never going to have that anxiety of disconnection.
Anyway, it was just such a nice little capsule of the time that he was waiting for that phone call at home, never getting it, missing it. Whatever the case may be. And then he still wasn't home when she called. His dad was. Do you remember calling someone's house and being like, hi, is Pacey there?
Hated it. Literally hated it. The anxiety of talking to my friend's parents for 30 seconds was enough to keep me from not calling at all.
And then when the parent was like, oh, no, they're not here right now. You were like, are they just not taking my call? Are they there?
Did any of your friends have pagers?
No.
Oh my God, mine did.
Oh my God. Jersey was operating on a different level.
Speaking of beepers, Mike Potter selling drugs.
Good Lord. Now, what is going on in the storyline, do we think, really?
I think that he came home from jail.
Mm-hmm.
His buddy Pete came over and was like, look, let's get this back up and running. You've got this business. We can run it through here. We can all make some money. I don't know. Where do you think his head's at?
I'm just confused that like the Mike's competitors went to the cops and said, like, that's where I'm starting to get. So then the police want Mike Potter's help. Even they're going to arrest him and then give him a deal to turn his competitors in exchange for a deal. But then is Pete the competitor, or is Pete, because Mr. Witter goes there and says, do you know Pete? I'm just lost on all of it, which is fine. You don't really need to know the details to understand the details to follow the story, but I'm very confused at the cop criminal ratio dynamic. What's happening here?
No, that was my thought too, of like, how big is the drug game in Capeside? If you're telling me that it's like a sleepy fisherman town and it's currently, I think, off season, I don't think there would be two big drug operations I mean, I think we're not supposed to think about it that deep, but like maybe the cops threw the Molotov cocktail in and they're just trying to smoke him out and get him to turn himself in. I don't know.
There's the spinoff. So yeah, it's fine. It's fine, but it's not fine.
Dawson approaches Mike and very threateningly is like, I know what you're doing. You need to stop it. Mike's like, okay, maybe I'm stuck. And he's like, well, you better get unstuck.
That's another question I have. Why is he stuck? Like, is he being forced into it? Is he being threatened? But then at the end, he says he was doing it to get ahead. So I'm really just, maybe it's an unreliable narrator. You know, we have to consider the source. Maybe Mike is just lying. Maybe he's confusing all of us. We're going in circles.
He is a little skittish. He's like a little squirrely.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that really bothered me. Really bothered me. And this is more a matter of taste and opinion. So I'm curious how you'll feel. Dawson goes to Mitch and Gail. Well, first Dawson goes to Gail and says, what do you do if you know something about somebody that's going to ruin their life? Like, blah, 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 blah. She says, you got to either tell the person or you got to tell the person who's hurting the person that you love. So that was his first shot. Then he realizes that that's not going to work. So he goes to Mitch and Gail after the fire. And they say, you got to go to the police. You got to go to the police. This is not right. You know what's right. Like, take matters into your own hands kind of thing. And I was like, Mitch and Gail, what is this advice that you're giving? Like, this is your child. If I were Mitch and Gail, I think I would go to the police. It felt like they were giving him bad advice or bad guidance.
It was contrived for, you know, the teen show of it all.
So I was like, okay, because the first time I watched the episode, I think I kind of glossed over that scene. And I was like, why is Dawson so full steam ahead? He basically goes to Joey and he's like, this is what we're going to do. I'm bringing you to the police station and we got this whole plan in place and we're going to figure this out. And we're going to send your dad back to jail because it's right. And I'm like, whoa.
I love your Dawson voice. If I were writing this, I would have left that scene out of the episode and just left it all on Dawson. Dawson goes to Joey. The fire is enough of a turn for me that Dawson could have had that turn. Okay, I need to tell Joey now. I don't think he needed his parents' advice. Maybe they're just trying to get Mitch and Gail in another scene. But yeah, to your point, it's a little contrived.
I just felt like that was really...
It was weird.
Weird. Yeah, weird.
Speaking of Mitch and Gail, she breaks the news to Mitch on the front porch. We love the front porch. We love the screen. We love the screened in porch.
Love it.
The wicker furniture, which
I was just gonna
a
say.
Listener let us know is the real house's furniture. That's not set deck.
Oh.
I've always wanted to bring this up since the person told me. It's the wicker furniture that came with the house. Also, the cushion in the pillow, the blue and white striped pattern. Those are my sheets. I just want to mention.
Your current sheets?
My current sheets and pillowcases, yeah.
Wow.
Just gives me that beachy vibe that I like.
Well, we know they love fish.
Their house is all fish. Also, Gail looking great. We're going to give hair and makeup a shout out because her hair it's coiffed. It's thick. It's popping. She's got bangs.
Boy, does she ever have bangs. And wouldn't you look great if you were telling your ex-husband that you were leaving for a better life? I would. I'd get glammed up.
And then he wants her back. And she says, no, you don't want me back. You want us back. And the version of us is gone forever because I cheated. And now you're having sex with Miss Kennedy. She doesn't say that. I'm rejecting.
But we love that. All season, she's wanted to do is get him back. And now she's healing. We love a healing journey.
We love a healing journey. And if you know how to do so, tell me how. I'm still trying to find mine. Yeah. And it's crazy we're rooting for her because she had the affair. But now we're like, Gail, this man's put you through enough.
It is. It's very interesting. It's good writing to make us more invested in her than in Mitch.
Yeah, because when he asked her to stay, I was thinking, no, you go to Philly. You take that regional correspondent job in Philadelphia.
She's outgrown her career here. She said it herself.
Exactly. Her and her bangs are too big for Cape Side. She's sick of Bob getting all the stories because he is a penis. He got the Hurricane Chris story and she is done.
She never got over that.
That's when she started applying.
She was like, I'm going to Philly. I'm going to write a story about teen girls and it's going to land me a job in Philly.
She faxed that resume everywhere. And for the people who have not watched, Gail is gone. Not from the show, from Cape Side. After this episode, Gail lives in Philly.
Gail is gone. Andy, gone.
There's stakes. Dawson and Joey are done.
And let's talk about Joey and her acting.
Oh my God.
It's unbelievable.
Katie Holmes, unreal. It's all been building to this.
The entire episode is great. The last scene, Oscars for me.
For me.
For us.
It is so good.
So she comes into the room and she starts asking her dad very explicitly, like knowingly, about what he's been doing. And he says, he confesses that he's been dealing drugs again. And she says, why? And it is the most heartbreaking word I've ever heard in my life.
It breaks down. The look on her face is she's just so upset, disappointed, disgusted,
betrayed,
scared, betrayed, all of it. Heartbroken.
Because in a previous scene, she asked him twice and he lied to her twice.
After the fire, before Dawson tells her, she's starting to piece things together. She knows Mr. Witter's poking around. The fire thing is weird. She kind of clocks a lot of weird behavior after the fire. And she asks him that night, is there anything going on? Are you sure you don't know anything about the fire? Are you sure? And Bessie is like, lay off our dad. He says no. And then she goes in to the final scene after she goes to the police station where Mr. Witter says, we need your help. And she basically says no. She tells Mitch, Gale, Dawson, and Mr. Witter, I don't trust any of you. I trust my father. It's our family, butt out. So I was so shocked when she revealed The Wire in 1999.
So shocked.
Because she said no. And you leave that scene thinking she didn't say yes. She didn't agree. But her acting, yeah, it's just it's awful.
I definitely thought at the time that she had finally like got confirmation and put together the pieces and she was coming home to confront him. And then the next season was going to be like, okay, now we know this thing about Mike Potter and we got to figure out how to deal with it. Not, oh, I'm wearing a wire and actually the police are outside.
Yeah. I like that the show elevated what could break them up, you know, because we've seen them get into their little petty arguments, and this is something that's not petty, it's not stupid, this is family, it's jail, it's, and it was realistically done. I think The Wire is a little much, but just him finding out this thing about the dad and then him telling her, I mean, you can't really move past that, but it's all believable.
And her saying very explicitly to him, stop meddling, we will not survive this. She says that without any room for misunderstanding, and he doesn't. He keeps pushing.
He says, I'm willing to take that risk.
But this is what I don't get. Because he thinks she's in danger or because he thinks it's the right thing to do and that a drug dealer should be in jail?
It's the right thing to do, I think.
Ugh.
We know Mr. Potter has been having regrets, which again was my pastor's present. I never really clocked that until the last scene. I know he regrets it in the last scene, but he's struggling with it the whole episode. He doesn't want to be doing it. He just wants to give his family a little bit of a reprieve. He wants to make it up to his family. I get it.
Yeah. No, totally. They've been living for 3 years, keeping everything afloat. They still have a house. They still have a business. Like, that's really impressive for two young people to pull off. So I understand him wanting to kind of take the burden off of them.
And Bessie can't even look at Mike. That was a good little detail. No dialogue.
I know. Look.
She's holding Alexander. Bodie is, let's just say he's at a chef's school somewhere. We don't know.
We don't know where Bodie is.
Just what a great episode.
So good. And then it ends, it ends here, but Jen and Jack's storyline ends with them going to Grams's house. I really loved that Jen says to Grams, I don't need adult supervision. I don't need a guardian. I'm not here because I need to be here. I'm here because I want to be here. I thought that was a really nice little tie up to their tiff.
I agree. I just didn't love Jen's attitude towards Grams, like Grams did something wrong. I don't really think Grams did anything wrong. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe throwing Jen out was a mistake. But I feel like Jen, I really feel like it was earned. I feel like Grams' behavior was earned.
You think she should have had a little more remorse, Jen, in that coming back?
For me, yeah. It was very much like, if you want me to move in, it has to be this, this, and that. And I think she maybe could have been a little softer.
More of a coming together. We both did things that were unsavory. Let's move past it.
Yeah. And it, her three conditions, like, we need to get to the root of why this never worked out. Like, you need to understand me and I don't need your judgment. But Jen is judgmental, and Jen doesn't really try to understand Grams either. So it just could have been a little more 50-50 for me.
Yeah, I see that.
I don't know.
And then she says, the third condition, and they pan over to Jack sitting on the swing.
Yes.
And he's moving in.
And Graham says, I've been meaning to clean out your grandfather's room.
Love that. Dream team assemble.
Yeah. Oh, we are in it now. Jack and Jen are here to stay. They're kind of like our third couple. You know, it was like Dawson and Joey, Pacey and Andy, Jack and Jen. And Jack made a reference to, he doesn't know how long his dad's going to keep the house. His dad's probably going to sell the house. When he was telling to Jen, like, you should move in with Graham, so you shouldn't stay with me. Should we talk about Jen staring at the fire?
Sure.
Jen did a paper on teen suicide. She kind of tells Jack, you know, I get why people do it. Haven't you thought about it? Jack says, yeah, but like, not seriously. And Jen's like, well, I have. Anyway, Jen's suicidal. During the fire, she doesn't immediately run. She stares.
She doesn't want to die. She just doesn't really care to try to live.
Right. Relatable. Let's be honest. It's 2024. Now, something I want to say. Dawson gets the credit. And this is me. You should have brought this up. Dawson gets all the credit for saving the day at the fire. But Pacey saves Joey.
That's a great point. He takes her out.
Carries her out. And it is so cute.
And also, if the Witters weren't there, Dawson wouldn't have been able to do anything. Mr. Witters in the room with him with the fire extinguisher. It's because he broke the window. And I guess that's how Mike got out of the room. But please, it was a group effort.
Anyone could break a window.
Literally, children do it. Oh, the shot that I was referencing in the director section, before the fire starts, there's a handheld shot in that kind of back room of Mike Potter looking at the Coke, and then it goes around and we see him through the blinds. It just felt very un-Dawson's to me, but it felt right. I liked it.
Yeah. The music sting was very, to me, Aaron Spelling, very 90210 Beverly Hills. There was this music sting that like Beverly Hills used to kind of do whenever it revealed something kind of shocking or naughty. Melrose Place did it too. I mean, I'm sad to say it, but I think that's all I have for this episode, this amazing season 2 finale. I can't believe it.
That's all I have too. It was so good. Things are shaken up. Season 3, we'll see where everything settles. Season 3 is a good one. I'm really, really, really excited to get into it.
Well, that's sad, but that's it.
That's it. And I don't have a creek speak for this one, but I just wanted to shout out Catherine on Instagram, who fully supported me in my passion about the seagulls in one of the last episodes. I think it was the last episode. People from Jersey know seagulls are not a joke, okay?
Absolutely. Seagulls are no joke. And it's time we talk about it.
Amen. Shall we do a Dawson's draft?
Oh my God. Yes. Let's.
The topic this week is best season finale.
Mm-hmm.
Any season, any show, the ones that have stuck with us.
I'm so excited because I love a season finale. I love a season finale cliffhanger. I love a season finale moment. Let's dive in.
You're first.
I'm first. Oh my God. Well, I'm going to have to go with the iconic Melrose Place season 3 finale because
okay,
Dr. Kimberly Shaw blows up Melrose Place.
That scene is nuts.
And not only does she blow up Melrose Place, it's like really well shot, filmed, constructed, executed, stunts, special effects. Good Lord. They destroyed that set.
And they're all there, right? I think I've only seen the scene, not the episode.
They're all there except for one or two characters. Their storylines also ended on a huge cliffhanger. Like Jake is in a fight with his brother. They go flying over a construction site because they're fighting at the top of a construction site and they go over it. It ended with her hitting the detonator, but then season 4's premiere picked up with the explosions in the aftermath. And I just loved when shows did that too. Like they picked up right the second it left off. Like that always blew my mind and I loved it.
You talked about that at the beginning of this season of Dawson's because it picks up at exactly the same moment.
What's your number one?
I have to take, and now this is a little bit of a gray area because it is kind of a series finale, but at the time that I watched it, it was not announced that there would be no additional episodes. So to me, I watched it as a season finale.
Fair, fair.
It is the Fleabag season 2 finale. I know I talk about the show all the time, but it is such a good show. The second season of that show was so good to me, and that episode in particular, it's right after Fleabag and Hot Priest wake up together. They've just had this, like, finally they've come together physically and you don't know how things are going to shake out, and then it's basically one day in the life of them, and it's her father and stepmother are getting married, and Claire and Martin have this breakup scene that is like a work of art to me. The whole episode is just like every beat of the episode is so perfectly done. There's like really great moments between Fleabag and her dad. There's sexual tension through the whole episode. Their chemistry to me is top tier. And then they don't end up together. And it is the most heartbreaking thing at the end because she says, I love you. And after a couple of minutes, he goes, it'll pass. And it's like, oh.
I just watched it. It's so good. It's a really good finale. It's she finds out this piece of art that she's stolen from her stepmother.
Yeah.
for two seasons now, she finds out that her mom was the inspiration for it. She gives it back to her stepmom. Her stepmom says, oh, it's so funny you took that piece. You know, I made it after your mom. I was inspired by. So she steals it back. And
when I watched it, I was like, is this the series finale? Because this could and should be a series finale, but they hadn't announced if there would be a third season yet. It's just so good. Highly recommend.
For my number two, I'm going to go with Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 5. What I loved about Buffy is that it had a seasonal identity. You could just look at an episode and know what season you're watching. The big arc of the season was a big bad. It was a villain every season that she defeated in the finale. And my favorite big bad was Glory, who she fought all season. And it was this epic fight. And then Buffy ended up sacrificing herself in the season 5 finale. She dies. The last shot is her tombstone. And then that was the last episode on the WB as well. So it was a nice little RIP Buffy on the WB and moved to UPN.
Okay. I think I'm going to take Lost season 3.
Shoot, I had that one.
It's the episode that changes the show. Basically, the entire series up to that point, we've been flashing back. So we're half the time we're on the island and half the time we're flashing back to each of the characters' lives in the real world before the island. And at the end of this episode, we're watching this episode and it's Jack. And we don't really know what period of time it is. We know that he's having some alcohol problems and some drug problems. And it's very vague. And then he makes a phone call at the end of the episode and he says, I need to see you. Meet me at the airport. And he pulls up and Kate gets out of the car. And we're like, wait, what? Because they did not know each other before they were on the island. And he says, we have to go back. So we realize that it's been flashing forward and that they did get off the island. And that was such a mind-blowing realization. I just remember being like, wait, what? And also, Charlie sacrifices himself. And in his last moments, he writes Penny's boat on his hand and shows Desmond. And he ends up saving everybody. It's just wonderful. It was a game changer.
I love that finale. It was on my list. I always think of that episode when I think of the cliffhangers because it flipped the show in its ear. The flash forwards came out of nowhere. There were flashbacks up until for 60 episodes. And then they're just like, boom, it's a flash forward. No show has really shocked me like that. I mean, it was insane.
Insane.
I'm so sad you took it. But for my number three, I mean, I'm going to go with this episode. Dawson's parental discretion advice season 2 finale for all the reasons we've talked about in this episode. But when I think of one of the images that I think of when I think of Dawson's and I think of Dawson season 2, it's Joey's face. And I think of the scene with the wire and the confession. Oh. And so it stuck with me. And I do think of that moment a lot. So I have to go with Dawson season 2. No elaboration needed.
I think I'm going to take Dexter season 4. So I've said it before, but I didn't watch past season 4. It is the season with John Lithgow playing the Trinity Killer. The whole season, it's kind of this like cat and mouse game. But this episode is when they finally know everything about each other. Arthur knows that Dexter's after him. Dexter knows obviously that Arthur is a serial killer. Dexter keeps getting thwarted in his efforts to catch Arthur and ultimately kill him. And there's also this theme in the episode or kind of in the end of the season of Dexter being like, you know what? I think I'm going to give this up and be a family man. He has Rita. He has a baby. He's like, I think now's the time for me to like put this all to rest. So he calls Rita. He tells her to get out of town and he's going to meet her. He finds Arthur. He ties him up. He's about to kill him. And Arthur says, it's okay. It's already over. And Dexter's like, what? And he kills him and he's so happy. He's like, okay, that was it. That's my last killing. Everything is done. Everything is good. He gets home. He has a message from Rita and he realizes that she had to end up going back to the house. And he's like, he gets there and he finds her dead. And Arthur had already killed Rita before Dexter killed him.
It's a great twist. And then his baby, Harrison, is sitting in her blood, just like he was when Harry found him as a baby.
Full circle.
That was a great season. He was my favorite villain on Dexter. Oh, so good. For my number four, I'm going to go with the Felicity season one finale. Felicity has to make a choice between Ben and Noel. Ben has asked her to take a road trip back to Palo Alto. Noel's invited her to go to Europe. Felicity gets in a cab, and you don't know if she's going to Ben's. You don't know if she's going to the airport. Noel's waiting for her at the airport. Ben is waiting for her outside his house, his apartment on the street. And I thought about that all summer long. And my mom and I would rewatch it and be like, no, she's going here. She's going there. And there's no clues. She's just like in a cab. And then she chose Ben. And you don't find out until like the middle of season two premiere who she ended up choosing. And like, I don't care about shows like that anymore. It was so good.
I think I'm going to take a comedy and I'm going to take The Office season two finale, which is Casino Night. The Office is, we've talked about it. It's my comfort show. I think it's hilarious. The jokes are hitting. It's, you know, everything about it is great. But this is the episode where after two seasons of building this very clear flirtation and crush on Jim's side of things towards Pam, that Jim confesses his feelings to Pam and Pam's engaged. Her fiance just decided to leave the party. They're in the parking lot. Jim comes out and he's like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? And that performance is so heart-wrenching on both of their parts. Jenna Fisher and John Krasinski, amazing. So well acted on both sides. It's such a long time coming. It's like you feel this release, but also Pam's confused and resistant, obviously. We leave them. She goes into the office. She calls her mom. We hear her tell her mom that Jim is her best friend. And then Jim walks in and kisses her. And that's how the season ends.
I remember that moment. They're in the dark, right?
Yeah.
The lights are off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was so into The Office at the beginning. You know, I fell off eventually at some point, but I was so into The Office. That's a good one. That's so funny because my number five is also a comedy. I mean, it wouldn't have been if you didn't take Lost, but since you took Lost, my number five is a comedy. I'm going to go with Friends season three because they're at the beach looking for clues to like Phoebe's parents and Terry Garr's in it. And it's amazing. So basically Ross is trying to choose between Rachel and his current girlfriend. And then he walks into a door and you don't know what door he picked. He just opens the door and he's like, hi. And then it ends.
Okay. I think I'm going to take another comedy. It is The Good Place season one. So I actually have a visceral memory of watching this finale at your house. The first season of the show, it's like the premise is they're in the good place. Kristen Bell's character realizes that she's there by mistake and she's just trying to like live up to being in the good place. I remember you saying specifically, you're like, I don't know. I don't think I like this. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to see it through. And so I said, can we watch the finale? And you hadn't really been keeping up with it. In the finale of season one, Kristen Bell puts together that they're not in the good place. They're in the bad place. And she calls out Ted Danson, who is Michael, the architect of the good place. The moment that she says, this is not the good place, this is the bad place, his evil laugh in that moment is some of the best acting of all time. And I remember being at your house and you looking at me and going, did you know this? Did you know that this is what the show is about? It was just such a surprising moment. So it's just, yeah. It was a really well done finale. And it completely, like you're saying about Lost, flipped it on its ear.
Yeah, it's the episode that made me get back into it. I started it over from the beginning and then I watched it all the way through. It's such a good little twist. And comedies don't really have twisty finales a lot. So
yeah, it was a great show.
We love that. So my five are Melrose Place season three, Buffy season five, Dawson season two, Felicity season one, and Friends season three.
Mine were Fleabag season two, Lost season three, Dexter season four, The Office season two, and The Good Place season one. What you watching?
What am I watching? I binged like five episodes of The Patient last night, which I believe I've talked about before, but I'm really liking it with Steve Carell. He gets kidnapped by his patient. And I'm just continuing on my journey with Wayward Pines, The Leftovers, and Brother's Son.
What's Brother's Son?
I haven't talked about Brother's Son yet.
I don't think so.
I've been watching Brother's Son on Netflix, and it is this, it just actually got canceled last night, which is really sad. But I still think it's a solid one season show that I definitely recommend. It's kind of a nod to old kung fu movies. It's about two brothers who one was raised in Taiwan under their crime lord father, and then one stayed with their mother in America, and she hid him from everything. He has no idea about his dad or brother. And then due to an event in the season premiere, the worlds collide. So it's two brothers kind of meeting for the first time. They have memories of each other as children, but they don't really know each other. And so it's the meshing of the worlds, and like the hard brother who's in the crime world needs to be softer, and the soft brother who's raised in LA is all like in like wants to do improv comedy. Like he kind of needs to, and it's Michelle Yeoh, and come on.
Love.
So I highly recommend. It's great. I have one more episode, so I don't really know how they top it off, but I'm living.
Awesome. I love that. Well, I am watching Love is Blind, the new season. Trainwreck, hot mess, love it. It's very reminiscent to me of the first season. The last few seasons have been very messy. A lot of like drama, a lot of, I don't know, just people you could tell were like there for attention kind of thing. And this one, it is still messy and it is still drama. There's tons of love triangles. And since the shooting, there's been like a lot of people coming out being like, he had a girlfriend, she had a boyfriend, he was married, like that kind of stuff, which is messy. But it feels like there are a few solid couples to balance out the messiness. And I don't know, it's just highly entertaining.
I see what you're saying. The first few seasons after the big success of the first season, you think people were kind of faking it.
Totally.
Clout chasers. And now you think maybe they found some people who actually just want to be on the show to date.
Yeah, I think so. And like, you obviously never know if people are gonna like fall in love with each other, but I think some people genuinely did. And I obviously don't think that they're perfect by any means, but I think that some of them might get married and some of them might last. So that's cool.
The season's very buzzworthy. It's all over everything. I see it on Instagram. I see it on Facebook. It's weird. Everyone's talking about it.
I started binging it this last week and I didn't realize that there's still a couple episodes to be released. So I'm caught up now and now I'm waiting. I think it's next week. There's three episodes coming out and then it'll be done. But would recommend.
Loves it. Well, I think that's it.
Season two is done.
This is so sad. We're going to take a little break.
Yes, we need it. We need a hiatus.
But we're going to do the Bobby Awards, which will be dropping in a few weeks.
Yes, absolutely. Keep your eyes tuned to the Instagram for updates on when we'll be back.
And please send us award category thoughts and nominations, recommendations, suggestions.
Yeah, the Bobbies were fun last year, but we would love to add some new categories if anybody has any ideas.
But we'll be back.
We'll be back with season three, which, like I said, is one of my faves. Is my fave, actually. So looking forward to that.
Me too. Well, that's all I got, you guys. Oh, it's so sad.
Stay cool. Keep in touch. Have a great summer. Just kidding. We'll be back by then.
Summer. All right. Well,
that's it for season two. We'll talk to you next season.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.